Hello, welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service and the hospitality sector. I'm actually in Berkshire today. I'm at Quintex's head office, and I'm joined by Emma Brooks, who's the managing director of Quintex. She's also actually the chair of the FEA Food Service Equipment Association, and Chris Stevens, who's Quintex's commercial director. We're going to be discussing, obviously, we're going to talk about extraction, on-demand systems, their products. We're also going to have a personal chat with them about their history into the industry and a couple of fun questions. So I'll get on with the show and let my guests do the talking. So Emma, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So Emma Brooks, you're the managing director of Quintex and also the current chair of the FEA.
Yes, that's right. I started my tenure with the FEA in 2024, and you and I had a nice chat at the FEA conference.
We did.
Back then. And I've been working for Quintex for 22 years now.
Wow.
Yes.
You don't look old enough.
Oh, thank you.
That was season one of the podcast. I think it was episode 15, which came out in December of 24. We sat down on stage and talked more about the FEA, really, I think. So just to sort of start us off, before we get into like work, if it's okay, just so the listeners can get an idea of who Emma is, a little bit about yourself. You're a mum, you're a manager director, you've got a husband, you know, tell us a bit about you.
Okay, I mean, going back, well, my son's 25 now.
Okay.
So I went back to work when he was 4 months old, working part-time. And I worked for a training company in an enterprise centre in Berkshire, just down the road from here. And I bumped into a guy called Keith Stevens.
Okay.
Who happens to own Quintex Systems. So he offered me a job back in 2004 when Lucas was 3 years old.
Right.
So I worked again. I worked part-time. Lucas went to nursery. I was the mum that didn't always turn up at sports day because I was working. But, you know, he seems to be fine about that now. So, yeah, I've been here for a long time. And it's...
When you started here, what was your role? I mean, you didn't come straight in as MD.
No, I was... I actually came in as office manager.
Okay.
And then we had a couple of sales guys at the time who left, and they were going to look for a new salesperson. And I said, well, let me do it. It can't be that hard.
Right, okay.
To sell.
So you went from office management into sales?
Yes.
On the road?
Yeah.
Okay. And then?
And then I was in sales for a long period of time. I had a short break from Quintex back in 2016, just for a few months. Came back again. There was a change of ownership. I won't go into all of that. And... yeah, I came back in 2017 as, again, in sales. And then in 2019, I became the general manager and then managing director late 2019. And then obviously COVID came.
Wow, okay.
So I had to, just taken over running a business, never run a business before in my life.
And then hit with that.
And then hit with COVID. And I remember sitting on a call with all my guys. As everyone knows, I'm quite an emotional person. And I remember sitting on a call with all my guys and crying, and I couldn't speak because we were going to close the business. That was how bad it was. And then thank goodness for Rishi Sunak and the furlough scheme. We're still here to tell the tale.
Wow, okay. Yeah, because at that point you didn't know if there was going to be any help from government.
No.
Wow, okay. Well, you've done it and you turned it around. And,
yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
It's tough times.
It's been a tough job, but we've got a great team and we're growing again now, which is fantastic. We're back up to 20 people and we're looking at the moment for two more people to join us in the sales team.
Wow.
So we're really starting to grow the business again, which is fantastic.
Okay. And so going back to its roots, Quintex, was it always involved in extraction, or is it sort of developed into what it is now in terms of the technologies you've got? Or
it was originally set up as a food consultancy, if you like. The original owner of it was called Food Industry Technical back then, in 1996 when it was established. And the person, Len Stevens, who established the business back then, he worked for Cadbury Schweppes. and he set up a consultancy. And then his son, Keith Stevens, came to the business and bought demand control ventilation to the UK.
Oh, okay. And that's kind of how...
And that's how it started.
How you got into
that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so that kind of... That makes sense. So if I'm going to get into a couple of work questions, if it's okay.
Sure.
So from your perspective, is extraction still kind of misunderstood parts of the kitchen? I mean, we see that... I mean, even as in my role, if it's done wrong, and if it goes wrong, it's really bad.
Mm.
You know, do you see that or not so much? Or
obviously that does happen. You know, if a kitchen's been the extraction in a kitchen has been undersized, for example, and they don't find that out until they're cooking,
yes,
you know, and the kitchen's open and the kitchen's running, then that's a major issue.
Yeah,
and I guess. You know, that can happen during the design stage because they've tried to cut corners because maybe there's access issues.
Yeah.
And they can't get a big enough fan in place. They can't get the right ductwork because they're trying to fit it into something that is not really fittable, if you like.
Yeah. So but they're trying to cut, not cut corners, but yeah, keep people happy.
The client wants a kitchen in this, you know, basement space with no access, no, you know, solid ceilings and all of that sort of stuff. That's a tough gig to put a kitchen into.
Yeah.
I don't know how often that happens, but in terms of your question of is it misunderstood? I think not so much. Everyone knows that you need extraction in a kitchen, and particularly if you've got gas equipment, you have to have extraction. I think the most misunderstood part of it is the demand control side of extraction.
Okay.
And I say it, we're using it now in our social media posts that we're the best kept secret in the industry because I've been here for 22 years and I'm still telling people about demand control ventilation and they've never heard of it.
Yeah. No, it's true. It is true. Even when I mention it to clients, it's all, well, that's new. It isn't actually new.
No, it's not.
But I wonder why that is. Is it just educational piece or scepticism or I don't know?
I'm not sure. I think maybe in terms of our customers. So we've traditionally worked direct to client.
Okay.
We've done that for the past however many years. And I would say that still 80% of our business is direct to client.
Okay.
So the clients are hearing it from us. But I think there's obviously
like big group chains coming to you.
Yeah, so the likes of Wetherspoons, Mitchells and Butlers, you know, those big pub groups and then big hotel chains. And they hear it from us. They hear it directly from us. And we're doing a rollout into an existing estate, into an existing kitchen and into an existing extraction system. I think the major problem that we have found is in terms of the specification side of things is the knowledge isn't there, the awareness. I think there's been probably for many years one big player in the ventilation industry. And as a result of that, demand control ventilation has been value engineered out of a project.
Yeah.
So it's just like, why even bother putting it in if it's just going to get value engineered out anyway? From a consultant's perspective or designer's perspective, they've probably done it many times and it's so therefore they just leave it out. But I don't know, again, going back all those years, I remember sitting in front of clients even and saying, your fans will be running 24/7, if not 24/7, 18 hours a day. You know, and they're like, no, people will switch things off. And no, they absolutely will not. They will not switch things off. And it's all about education and them seeing that for themselves. And we've been able to show clients that through our data from the Cheetah system, that they're not turning their fans off. They are actually leaving them on a lot longer
all the
than
time.
They should
do. I mean, I recently was in a casino in London visiting, doing a site survey, and yeah, it was a Monday. The kitchen was actually closed, and all the extraction was on full tilt, and it was like 6 a.m. in the morning. I was like, okay, there's not even open today.
No, you need to tell us which site that is so we can do a survey.
I don't want to inspect. So, but yeah, you're right. People just don't. They just leave it on.
Yeah.
And chefs go out the door. That's not their fault. It's just sometimes it's controlled by the BMS, isn't it? And people don't know how to turn it off.
Yes, there is that. And I think, again, though, there should be timers in place, but timers fail, so things don't get turned off. And obviously relying on people to do the turning off, it doesn't happen because that's just not in people's nature, mostly. But I think things, we are seeing a step change. And even I'm talking back in the day when they didn't realise fans were being left on. And obviously there's a lot less places now that will leave fans running 24/7, let's say. There still will be sites that do that, but there's less of those. And I think in terms of the going back to the sort of specification side of it, you know, we've been going out and meeting all of the sort of consultants and the designers, doing lunch and learns for them so they can see what Cheetah is, how do you specify it in a project. I think that's important for them, is, and we want to make it easy as well. We'd do it for you kind of thing. We'd do everything that we can possibly do for you to just slot it in
On the project
and make it much simpler. And I think that's where we're trying to get to.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, the value engineering piece, and I've seen it myself as well, does that come down to just making sure the client's educated, the project team's educated, that they know what this is and what the benefit is? Because the return on investment's pretty quick.
Yeah, I don't. To be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I can only imagine that when it gets to that point of value engineering out, they're not even looking at, oh, that could save us money. They're just looking at things that are not a necessity.
Yeah.
And can just be taken out of the project to take cost away. I mean, I was talking to, we were at a conference last week, and they'd built a new hotel, and I think their budget was 25 million and they spent 65 million. I mean, how you're 40 million over budget, who, God only knows. Obviously, maybe they needed to do a bit more value engineering in that project. I don't know. It's quite new to us as well. So we're learning all the time in terms of project work. I think we're learning as well as people learning about our product.
I think the thing as well is that people see that the capital costs of the kitchen, that's just one cost, isn't it? You've got all the electrical mechanical works and everything, all the enabling works that goes with that, and that often is much bigger than the actual cost of the kitchen itself.
Yeah, and that can be an issue in itself that, again, we've learned over the last 12 months probably, is where does it sit? Where does ventilation sit?
Yeah.
Because as the kitchen designer, you go as far as the canopy.
Yeah.
And then it's the M&E person that's doing the bet from the canopy to the fan. So technically, the demand control system is installed in both areas.
Yeah.
So who takes responsibility for it? And I think that has, again, creates a like, no one wants to take responsibility for it, so they don't put it in because... I don't want to be responsible.
Yeah, that's true. It's got over as to who's spec. But I guess if you're working with the M&E consultant properly, hopefully that will
would hope so. I think for us, it's just learning how all of those pieces fit together.
How relationships work.
And how all those relationships work and where we fit within those relationships in terms of our products.
Do you think that... and we're talking now about extraction. I sit down and talk to Chris, we'll talk about the extraction a bit more. But do you think systems are being designed for compliance rather than performance? Like, everyone obviously focuses on, you know, DW172 and flow rates, and that's the minimum, I guess, or the gold standard or minimum, whenever you look at it.
I'm not sure, really. I mean, if I think back to... what used to happen is actually they over-specced. The kitchen extract in a lot of cases was just over-specced.
Too big,
yeah. Which is great for a demand control ventilation system. Because when you retrofit it, you can save loads of money.
Yeah.
But I think that's changing. There's different fans. There's more efficient fans. There's EC fans. There's less gas equipment.
Yeah.
Therefore, you know, they don't need to overspec the fans as much as they used to.
Yeah. Was that just like comfort? They were just like, be safe and then no comeback.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of places where a demand control system has been installed, the maintenance regimes are quite poor, really.
Right, okay.
It's very reactive.
Yeah.
Most of the, you know, restaurants, pub groups, they're reactive maintenance.
Yeah.
There's not proactive maintenance. They'll wait for a fan to fail and then they'll fix it.
Yeah.
They won't do very much proactive stuff in terms of that cost, I guess.
It is cost, isn't it? Margins are tight.
The thing is, you'd almost need two exact same companies running alongside each other, one doing proactive maintenance
one doing reactive
to see whether actually there is a financial benefit in either one. But that's not going to happen in the real world. That's not possible.
So it's not difficult to say whether it's a good choice or bad choice.
Exactly.
I mean, if we just talk a little bit about going back to the on-demand system, Cheetah, what problem is it actually solving?
It's not so much solving yes and no. I mean, funnily enough, there's a post gone out today on our LinkedIn, which is talking about it fundamentally will improve the overall kitchen performance.
Okay.
You'll get 40 to 70% reduction in fan energy. You get significant reduction in HVAC load. So if there's air conditioning feeding into the kitchen supply fan, for example, that has air conditioning, you'll save money on air conditioning. If you don't take as much air out, you don't need to put as much air in.
Right, okay.
And you don't need to heat or cool as much air.
There's a
scientific calculation that tells you how much it costs to heat or cool 1 cubic meter of air.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you put in less of that in, you don't need to pay as much money, as well as the fan energy saving.
Okay.
So the biggest thing for Cheetah, not that it's solving a problem, is it saves energy. It saves wasting energy and it saves money, therefore.
Yeah.
It improves comfort for kitchen staff. We install CO2 sensors in every installation that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So if levels of CO2 rise, the fans would speed up.
Yeah.
The same as if heat rises, the fans will speed up.
Okay.
It can lower noise levels. So if you've got a noisy fan, if you've got noise abatement issues, we've had many, many clients contact us because the EHO have been called in because they've got a noisy fan.
Right.
And we can reduce the speed of that fan. And particularly we can set timers overnight so the fan doesn't run. Or we can, and the fan will...
hotel rooms or something.
Exactly. Or even a restaurant in the high street. And there's residents around it. Some clients have terrible trouble with residents complaining about this noise.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we've solved some of those problems.
Okay.
By controlling Cheetah, slowing it down more, and making sure it's not running after 11 p.m. and not running until 8 o'clock in the morning, and all of those things, because we can set timers on it and things like that. And then, just the carbon reduction, you're ticking all those net zero boxes. And it's often, again, one of the fastest return on investment. You know, ventilation uses 30 or 40% of the whole kitchen power.
Wow.
So if you can reduce that, you're going to save a lot of money and save a lot of carbon.
What's the average sort of return on investment, do you think, on...
I mean, we generally, we're around 2 years, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's quite quick.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I guess also there's the add-on of less pressure on the fan because it's not being used as much.
Exactly.
So maybe less maintenance.
Yes.
And maybe some other periphery.
Yeah, fan maintenance should be reduced. The fan should last longer.
Okay.
Because you're not running it at full speed constantly. So, it should last longer. You know, we can help with air imbalance issues by, again, just balancing with the inverters on the fans. You might not need both fans running at 100% as maximum. It might be because the supply fan is oversized, you could run that a little bit lower, but it will still give you enough of the air to move around and give you those air changes and give you the right volume of air. But we can adjust that again, and we can adjust all of this remotely as well as on site.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Just a couple, to come to the end of this section, a couple of other... So you're MD of Quintex.
I am.
And you're obviously chair of the FVA. And you run a home and all of that, quite busy. How do you balance all those different roles, if you like?
Well, I work a lot.
Okay.
No, I mean, I'm trying... it's important for home life. to have a balance, because I'm pretty sure my husband would have divorced me by now. Because, you know, there are days where I'll work all day long and I'll get my laptop out in the evening and I'll sit there. And especially, I don't do it as much now. I make a point not to.
Yeah.
But I'm also constantly on my phone.
Yeah.
While watching a movie. Are you watching this part? Yeah. No, you're not. You're looking at your phone. No, I wasn't, honestly. I wasn't. So, yeah, I don't know if I do balance it, but, you know,
it's a difficult.
I show up each day and I try my best.
That's all you can do. And you're coming to the end of the... This year will be the end of your tenure as chair.
Yeah. Yeah, in November. Yeah, I hand over to the lovely Lawrence. Yeah, I'm quite sad about it, actually.
Are you?
I'm just getting used to it. I'm just getting used to standing up on stage.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel long, does it, too?
No,
it feels quite short.
Exactly. I almost felt like this year I might not even cry on stage, but I will, because I'll be saying goodbye.
Exactly. But you'll stay on as on the
board. So I'll be staying on for another 2 years as the immediate past chair.
Right.
And on the council and the board, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and then I'm going to talk to Chris Stevens, the commercial director, and then I'm going to invite you back, if that's okay.
Lovely. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, now I'm joined by Chris Stevens, who's the commercial director here at Quintex. He's also one of the leaders for the Next Gen initiative from the FEA, which I don't know if I explained that correctly, but I'll let Chris explain it. Chris, welcome to the show. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Yeah.
Same again, really. Just a little bit about you and how you got into this sector, where you were brought up. Are you from this area where we went to school and stuff like that? And just a bit of.
So I'm from Berkshire, born and bred around here, went to school and first jobs and things always from around this area. I started in Holiday Inn in Reading. As just in the kitchen and
on the whereabouts is that one?
Yeah, Richfield Avenue, just outside Reading Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
Started there as like one of my first jobs.
Reading, so I know Reading.
Did you?
Quite
okay.
Well,
yeah, yeah. So. Near Caversham, mate.
started
off there and then I went into marketing and PR and worked in sort of video game analytics and then into IT and then full circled into the family business and I've now been here for 6 years.
6 years?
Nearly 7 years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it feels like all of the past roles are a distant memory nowadays.
Oh, so, I mean, commercial director, what is that? I mean, what do you do day to day?
So mostly client facing, account facing, and sort of going out, meeting everybody, understanding opportunities, and making sure that our clients are looked after, essentially from project level right through to new sales, essentially.
Okay. So travelling all over the country,
and the world sometimes.
Okay, seriously.
Yeah, we've been as far as Hong Kong and
wow.
Yeah, sort of Middle East. So we do a lot of work in the Middle East.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, Dubai and Abu Dhabi way.
So you're exporting the...
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Mainly the cheetah system.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a big export partner out in Dubai. So,
wow, okay.
And they facilitate the Gulf territories. So...
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That was just a domestic market.
No. We've got UK, Ireland, Europe.
So. Okay. And you're involved also in this initiative from the FEA, Food Service Equipment Association.
Yeah.
It's called Next Gen.
Next Gen, yes.
What is that?
So it's essentially, it's about bringing youth and fresh talent and
into our
sector. And I think it's really, really needed. It's quite an old industry with not... many new people and new faces coming in, and also I think the main thing is that the visibility on our industry is low from school, from university.
Yeah,
no one knows about our wonderful food service industry, and Next Gen is about putting the spotlight on it and giving that youth a channel to get into our industry and see how wonderful it is and all the different segments within it.
Okay.
Because really, most people, it's like catering college, going to be a chef. But what about if you don't want to be a chef, but you like the industry? And, you know, it's just opening people's eyes to it from an early stage, because at the moment I don't think there's much of that.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. I think a lot of people fall in, I'd hate that, but fall into the industry.
Yes.
Maybe it's yeah. That is the wrong.
We did some, like group work, but just as the next gen was starting up, and asking, you know, industry professionals from all age ranges, sort of, you know, how they got into it, and a lot of it is either like family business, or as you say, fell into it, went to, you know, looked on for a role online, and you know, it's all fallen into. We want to make that more of a pragmatic approach for people, and a more sort of you know, an actual pathway yeah. into it.
Okay, so and I saw there was like a seminar recently in London, I think.
Yeah, the masterclass, yeah.
Yeah, with Seamus.
Seamus, yeah, fantastic.
From The Alchemist.
Yeah, and there's lots of conversations about, you know, where this is going, and input from, again, industry professionals. We have an educational body that we're going to be working with. I don't know if that's fully publicised yet, but who work with the education market to help students and scholars come into all different industries. So,
okay.
Yeah, I won't say too much more on that because I don't know whether that's been fully published.
No. That's okay. I mean, it's good, isn't it? That sort of thing. The more we can do to promote our sector,
yeah.
and you know, give it a profile, it's a positive thing.
Yeah, we you know, more energy and you know, fresh ideas, and the youth coming through and in and taking our wonderful sector and industry into the next realm. Mm-hmm. Is what we need, I think.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay, so going back to Quintex, that's what we're here today, but it's obviously interesting to hear about that initiative.
Yeah.
Obviously, Emma gave us a kind of an overview, but from your perspective, what is it Quintex do? Obviously, you're known really well, I think, for the on-demand.
Yes.
I think, like, if people say Quintex, they think Cheetah.
Yeah.
But you're more than that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is it fair to say?
Yeah. We consider ourselves as, you know, our speciality is demand control, and our expertise is demand control. But we're also specialists in ventilation, the overall ventilation. So the kitchen canopies, the ductwork, the panelling, the heat recovery, everything that goes into it, we are around and surrounded by, and really we've only ever focused on just demand control or our other products like Ecofix, which is the automated duct cleaning, or the heat recovery system. But, you know, we know and work around the full package. So
the full system.
Yeah, that's what we
And you kind of started doing the full extraction system, what, about 12 months ago or so?
Yeah, bring it all together. And the idea is, or that what we're offering and achieving, is that we're the most sort of efficient ventilation system offering, you know, that package. So you know, bringing, you know, the demand into it, good quality canopy, simple sort of panelling for ease of use and things like that. That's kind of where we're going. Yeah, simplicity, integration, ease of recovery, and maximising your, you know, efficiency and carbon reduction, basically.
Okay. And what was the reason behind sort of bold move, moving into complete systems from going from, I mean, obviously it's probably a natural move because you're working in that sector every day, but was there a demand from customers? Is that was part of what
absolutely
we were trusted, and then they said
We were turning away a lot of opportunities where it's like, can you, and we're like, no, sorry, we don't offer that.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, and we're also referencing Emma's point about how we get beat out of opportunities because we're not doing the full package, and it just absolutely made no sense. So,
and then if one of your competitors comes in and does the full package, you might get pushed out. Possibly,
and,
I mean.
Yeah, and you know, we know we've got a really good offering, you know, competitive in many, many aspects. And I think consultant and project houses and client are all looking for an alternative option to what has always been that industry standard or whatever you want to call that side of things. So, that's...
Okay. We talked, obviously, a bit there about Cheetah and the on-demand system.
Yeah.
But Ecofix is something that a lot of people might not know about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've only just started specifying it. What is EcoFix, like in simple terms as to what it does?
EcoFix is a automated duct cleaning system which covers from extract spigot point and the canopy right through to atmosphere exhaust of the ductwork. So we put spray bars and spray nozzles, etc., throughout the ductwork.
Okay.
That will distribute throughout periods of the day and evening and night a detergent-based detergent, and then some bacteria.
Okay, like an enzyme or something.
Bacteria that eats the grease and works at the grease. So essentially it's maintaining a safe level of cleanliness in the ductwork 365 days a year.
Okay, so a bit similar to the kind of thing where people would know to put in the drains, but not really, or there's some...
You could say so.
Obviously, not really, but not the same chemical.
It's a compliance based system. So, you get peaks and troughs when you wait in between duct cleans.
Yes,
and that level of grease builds up in between. You know, every 3 months or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
EcoFix will enable a straight line of of cleanliness through that ductwork at all times.
So the duct still needs to be cleaned?
Reduces the need for manual cleans, basically.
Okay.
So it ticks lots of boxes for insurance and, as I've said, compliance.
Fire.
Absolutely.
So. I mean, what is the biggest benefit? Is it really fire that's the biggest?
Yes, fire is probably the main one, and then local, odour control as well.
Okay, of course, because if it builds up, you get more...
Yeah. Yeah, right, okay. It's smellier in the ductwork, but mostly it's that fire risk. That's the USP, is that it reduces that.
And it seems that I don't know. Are we seeing more commercial fires? I mean, when we see a commercial kitchen fire, it always seems to start in the ducts or in the canopy.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's fair. Are you seeing more of those, or is that not something you're involved in? Or
we're not. No, not so much. I won't go into too many statistics, but a lot of operators, they can, if they've got hundreds of sites, then they have more likely opportunity to burn a place down.
So the more sites you've got, the more chance. It seems on the news we see more, a lot of fires starting in the duct or the canopy. So the EcoFix will help reduce that.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely.
So a good product. Okay.
Yeah.
Before we go on to just the next section, I'm going to ask a few sort of, general questions. Because obviously now you're in extraction and doing complete systems. When you walk in a kitchen, what are the first kind of signs? Or if you're a restaurant out for a meal, what's the first signs that extraction might not be working correctly?
It's funny you mention that. Every time, it's a bit sad, every time I go out on a family meal or out with my wife or friends or whatever, I'm always looking in, trying to see the kitchen.
especially if
it's open. Oh, yeah, it's like a habit. I guess the main one is you walk through the front door and the doors are sticking or the doors are pulling. That's an unbalanced ventilation system. But, you're looking for... a smoky kitchen. If you've got a smoky kitchen, there's something wrong. Odour, smell. Yeah, smell is a big one.
Yeah.
But they're the main things, really.
Yeah. When you go in a restaurant, you come out stinking of stuff.
That
shouldn't really be happening.
No, it should not.
No,
it should not.
And I guess as well, it impacts on the customers. They may not come back.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
If the food might have been great, but the whole atmosphere might have been just wrong.
Yeah, you walk in to go and sit down and the restaurant's filled with smoke or there's a haze over the dining room. That's not a great start. But.
From your perspective now that you're involved in the total systems, do you think some of these issues are coming into design, installation, lack of operational care, as in cleaning, commissioning, is it all of the above?
I think it's all of the above.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. You can always fall into that trap of designing something very, very close to the bone on the ventilation requirements. So, you know, giving some sort of breathing space is always what we certainly do.
Yeah.
But, cleaning things, filters, making sure they're nicely hoovered out and things like that. Yeah, and just general vent checks.
I think that's a fair comment. Do you see that sometimes with some consultants, be it food service or M&E, that they're designing... almost to yeah. total compliance.
Yeah.
There's not much tolerance.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly
that's a
the
risk,
word.
Is it?
Tolerance, yeah. Yeah, I mean, why would you not give this some give it some tolerance? Because also there can be equipment changes over yeah, yeah. the over the period of that kitchen life.
Yeah.
Things swapped out, a menu change, all these kind of things. So we would always recommend, you know, you can run the airflow figures through the DW172 calculations and it gives you that figure. However, yeah. with experience, you say actually certain elements that you're going to need more for that.
Okay, so you'd always advise like an uplift or a bit more tolerance in,
yeah.
in the figures against...
Yeah, and I won't go too much into the detail of it, but there is like a figure that you can apply, like a three-step figure, which DW172 did have
yeah.
in the previous edition, but they took it out really right. weirdly, and vent specialists, I no doubt know what I'm talking about, but yeah,
okay.
You know, we still apply that, basically.
Right, okay, so you're sort of applying above yeah. compliance almost,
yes.
like a...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A yeah, platinum standard, maybe.
A safety net. Yeah, a safety net. Yeah. And then where we have demand in our cheetah in our packages, when it's not required, we can get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's near, but we always deliver it when it's required.
Okay, fine. All right. Okay, well, we're going to just run to an advert now. Thanks for that, Chris. And then
no worries.
You're going to come back with Emma, and we're going to discuss sort of some wider... extraction, kitchen design, things like that, industry things, and I've got a few fun questions for you.
Quintex are specialists in energy and grease management solutions. They provide innovative solutions designed to enable energy users to meet their environmental targets. Products include Cheetah, which is a demand control kitchen ventilation system, which can reduce energy costs by up to 80% on commercial kitchen extraction. Or EcoFix is a safe, automatic and eco-friendly grease management system for commercial kitchens extraction and ventilation systems, helping reduce cleaning and fire risk. Quintex also offer full turnkey solutions for commercial kitchen extraction needs. They are world leaders in smart technology for commercial kitchens, focused to drive energy and operating costs down across hotels, restaurants, supermarkets, and commercial catering operators. To find out more, visit quintex.co.uk.
Hello, welcome back. So now Emma is going to rejoin us with Chris, and we're just going to discuss a little bit more around extraction. Obviously, that's what Quintex specialists in, and also around the general food service market and some more light-hearted questions and kind of an outlook for the rest of this year. So I'll put it out to both of you. If we talk initially about extraction, is our industry, when I talk about our industry, I mean the food service equipment industry, consultants, and then the associated architects, designers, are they underestimating the importance of extraction, or aren't they?
I think just picking up from the end of the conversation that you guys were just having,
yeah.
in terms of the allowing for tolerance and all of that sort of stuff, I think that's really important. And what I think is there's a disconnect between who's designing the system and who's going to maintain it. And I don't think those two parties actually consider what's yep. going on at each other end of the in terms of the extraction.
Yep.
Because you talked about tolerance, and as I said in my bit earlier, that maintenance is the last thing that they consider.
Yep.
So the importance of maintaining the extract, let's talk, that's probably more of an issue than the importance of designing the extract in yep. a way, because that lack of maintenance can cause so many problems. So I recall a site many years back, and they'd had so many problems with it, and they kept blaming Cheetah, saying it was Cheetah that had caused this problem. We'd never had any problems before we had Cheetah installed.
Yeah.
And it got escalated to MD status. I went to the site to have a look and find out what was going on, and we eventually pulled out a supply grill at the back of the building, and it was absolutely caked in dirt and all sorts of stuff. And funny enough, when they cleaned that, Everything went back and everything was working fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think the importance of the whole, and you have to look at it, not just the extraction, it's the whole ventilation system. It's the air coming in and the air going out. Those two have to work together.
Yeah, okay.
Otherwise, you have all sorts of problems.
Yeah, and that can have impact on the business.
Yeah, and I think, again, in terms of when you're designing a kitchen, you need to consider... Or you're designing a ventilation system. You need to consider how is that going to be maintained in the future. Things like with the EcoFix system. So many times we've gone to install EcoFix and there's not enough access in the ductwork for people to clean it anyway.
Okay.
So there's all of those types of things when kitchens are being designed that I think need to be considered.
Yeah, definitely. From your perspective, Chris, do you think people are underestimating the importance of extraction, or is that too harsh for me to say that? Or
no, I think people are aware of it. It's just where it comes on the importance, you know, how high up on the list of importance I think is where it sits. It depends from contractor to contractor as well.
I suppose it's not a problem until it's a problem.
Yeah.
Like no one ever pays attention to it until...
Well, but the thing is ventilation, fans, often out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And that's always been with the likes of Cheetah, is that, you know, it gets designed in, ventilation, getting required airflow rates for that kitchen line at the time, kitchen cook line at the time, and it's forgotten about.
But then on a Saturday night, Valentine's Day, and your fan fails, and your extraction can't be... You could be losing tens of thousands of pounds in revenue because you now can't serve all those guests that have come to you for... And that's happened in probably a number of establishments.
Yeah, and then reputational as well.
Yeah.
You kind of answered my next question.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all right.
I'm one step ahead, always.
So kind of moving just away from that, do you think we're going to see more... Or are you seeing more... ventless kitchens or reduced extraction kitchens coming through? Do you see those? I know it's not really a market that you're in, because obviously you're about extraction, but
you do see in sort of quick passing hotels like your Expresses and things like that, where they've got a very smooth small food offering.
Yeah,
they don't need any of the grills or large fryers or anything like that. It's all sort of closed top, or, you know, they have one ration hour.
A combi.
We do see it, but we would never get involved in that side of it. Because demand controls don't actually have any real ROI on it, because they're so small.
Although we're seeing some ventless, you're saying that it's still... predominantly, it's still vented kitchens.
Yes.
And how does sustainability play into designing of extraction systems? Does it play in? Should it play in?
It definitely should play in. I mean, so DW172 is the sort of specification, and for many, many years, I've been banging the drum with the BISA to update DW172 to make demand control ventilation mandatory.
Okay.
It's mentioned in DW172, but it's not mandatory. There's a similar organisation document in the US, which is ASHRAE, and it is mandatory.
Okay.
If the airflow is over 2.1 metres per second or something, it's mandatory to have demand control ventilation, and that should be the case in the UK, in my opinion. I do not understand why a kitchen... in 2026 can be installed with manual controllers on the wall, expecting somebody to turn those up and turn those down, when you can install a system for not actually a great deal more money in the whole scheme of things in the long run, in terms of your next 5 years, in terms of sustainability, saving energy and all of those things. There's no sense in installing manual controllers.
Yeah. Because what is the energy saving, you say? It's about 60-70% on...
Yeah, it can be as much as 80% in fan energy savings.
Yeah.
We average, when we're doing our calculations,
if all the commercial kitchens...
Exactly.
...had that.
Yeah.
The pressure on the grid would be a lot less.
Yeah, yeah. And we, when we're doing our calculations and putting our proposals together for our clients, we'll sit with our figures around 40, 50%. We'd like to be conservative and not overpromise and underdeliver. And we'd rather show a smaller saving in our calculations, but actually improve on that and be better in the actual,
the delivery when it's installed. That's a good point. I mean, it's a DW172, it's going through some consultation at the moment.
Yes, thankfully, after my moaning and banging the drum, the FEA have got involved since Luke joined. And now there is a review of DW172, which is about time.
Okay, because how old is that legislation? Guidance?
I think it was
10 plus years.
Yeah, it was written originally that many years ago, but there was going to be a DW173, but I don't think that ever transpired. But maybe, watch this space, I guess.
Okay. So obviously we've covered quite a bit there about, when things go wrong or, things don't go right. And unfortunately, that's kind of indicative of extraction, isn't it? That, like I said, it's never a problem until it's a problem. But, Chris, have you got any, success stories? I know that you can't give away much because of your competition, but is there anything you can sort of say, well, this is what we did and it's been really positive?
Yeah, a large, well-renowned hotel group. We did a test with them many, many years ago on one or two of their sites, proved what Cheetah can do, and then later on rolled out throughout the rest of their owned estate throughout the UK and Ireland, which then led to further success of it being included in their brand standard.
Okay, so when you say brand standard, that's like for a new build, that's what it should be?
It will be new build and retrofit. So their thousands of hotels.
For any of their hotels or their franchise hotels or licensed, so anyone that's taken on
it. Yeah, so the several brands under the main brand, I think it's by 2027, there's a criteria to meet to have demand control.
As standard,
yeah.
And was that part of their, obviously there's a benefit financially, but I guess sustainability drive?
Massive carbon, the carbon footprint.
Okay.
Reduction for a brand like that is going to be huge, let alone the financial side of it. I mean, we can save hotel, single hotels, anything from north of 5K per annum.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I mean, in some of them where they've got maybe two or three kitchens, we're talking tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Depending what they've got.
So it's a real, real win-win.
Yeah, like financially, to a lot of hotel owners, it's the big driver.
Yeah.
So, it just depends what everyone's looking at, whether it's the carbon reduction or the financial.
But also, as Emma said, it's a good point that really it should be a driver commercially, because we're all being pushed to reduce our energy.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard that we've gone off piece here a bit, but the government are bringing out these plug-in solar panels that you can plug in at home. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen them. You better buy them at Aldi, apparently, so you can generate electricity at home.
Mid-lough.
But, like, what a win it would be if everyone put on-demand extraction and...
Yeah.
That could be huge savings of power.
Yeah.
That's just being wasted at the moment,
I guess. More than a plug-in solar panel, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Much more than a plug-in. I'm a bit dubious about a plug-in solar panel, but... But anyway.
I've got solar panels in my house. I've got 12. And I give about 10p a week back to the grid. And you get a lot more than that if you put Cheetah in.
Yeah. So Lord knows what a plug-in solar panel is.
Probably use more energy than it will give back.
Probably. Especially in the winter. Anyway, we digress there slightly.
Yeah.
There's a thought, maybe Quintex could run on that. No, I'm joking. Anyway, we'll do a few sort of more light-hearted questions, and we're just going to come back about like what's happening in the future for Quintex and industry and stuff. So, quick fire round, really. If it's just, I'm going to ask you both, just give me short answers. It's in the morning, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Tea.
Okay. Coffee machine at home?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Right, proper beans?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. I would expect less.
But I actually use the one in the office. More than the one at home.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Best city at the moment for food in the world?
At the moment, for me, it's Bologna, because we were there a year or so ago. And, and that is just blew me away. Everything from an independent trattoria, it just not having many expectations, just to be blown away by what was essentially, you know, looked like a family cook, you know, sort of grandma in the kitchen, quite literally. Yeah. And they're producing squid ink pasta underneath a little arch. And then you can take that culinary experience to wherever you want. You can go really high end, but even just the local bowl of pasta was just phenomenal.
I would say Seville.
Okay.
In Spain, because we were there. We were there last year.
Both of you have not gone for big cities in that sense, like New York or London or Tokyo. So, what was about for you there?
Just the, I think the atmosphere of Seville, the being able to, you know, sit outside. And the whole kind of setup of Spanish food in terms of the tapas. We spend a lot of time in Granada, which is another great city in southern Spain. And there you buy a beer and you get food and essentially free.
Okay.
Because in that region, that's the only region in Spain that actually that does that. You buy a beer and you get free food.
Okay.
I mean, it's not always the best quality of food because obviously they're giving it away for free, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, it's great to soak up three or four beers for sure.
Of course, yeah, yeah. Oh, nice. That's a good idea. So, and one piece of equipment in your kitchen you couldn't do without. I'm thinking more domestic now.
It's probably my fine cheese grater, my Parmesan cream.
Nice. That's quite high end. I like that.
No, I always wanted one. I was always, you know, getting cheese on top of the dishes with the, you know, the standard thick 2 mil grate, or 3 mil grate. And now we've refined it. How sad. £5 utensil, and that's like that. Transformed it.
We've got a Neff microwave stroke oven stroke. It does everything for you. You can roast something in it, and then you can warm up your porridge in the morning type thing.
So. Okay.
That's quite handy. Probably couldn't do without that. But also, I do have a coffee machine, and I am a bit of a coffee snob. Whilst I like a cup of tea first thing in the morning, I like a cup of coffee a bit sort of, you know,
later on.
And we're always having a debate about which is the best coffee and how much should we pay for coffee beans and all of that sort of stuff.
Mine's a dishwasher because it feels like it's constantly on.
Yeah.
That's
a necessity. That
and the washing machine.
Yeah.
That's mad. Well, one piece of advice that you would give to somebody opening a kitchen, it could be a restaurant, it could be a hotel, it could be a delivery, it could be whatever, is if they're new to the market.
Install Cheetah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get good staff.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing, is the service.
Don't underestimate your staff, yeah.
Yeah, I think getting staff and training them on what good service looks like. And then you'll just keep getting people coming back. Good food, good service.
Yeah, I second that. Yeah, service is, number one. You know, people who care, I think care is sometimes lacking in some places I've been to recently.
And some... I think it's fair to say, I'm not saying all, but parts of Europe service, this country included, service has dropped compared to other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Like I recently was in Thailand and like service is amazing.
Mm. Yeah, I bet,
you know, it's completely different. Talk about our industry, food service equipment industry. From your perspective, Chris, what we're getting right at the moment, what's good about what we're doing at the minute?
I think we're pushing on in certain technology avenues. I think people are tuning in to the need that there is a world of, I hate to use it, but you know, artificial intelligence and AI, and you know, we have to be aware that is very much on our front doorstep. So well, that's manufacturers trying to work with it to develop quicker. Then I think that's good. You know, everyone's talking about it. The conversation is starting. I think that's good. That's what's great, that we're attuned. You know, I don't want to say too much about what the industry's been like in the past, but maybe, you know, certainly from technologies like ours, it's been a bit sort of like, oh, you know, don't understand it, don't want to get involved. But I think that that sentiment is changing. And I think that's what's great about our industry, is that there's a genuine appetite to understand it.
Yeah.
And including our tech, you know, people are more buoyant to, if we were having this conversation 2-3 years ago, we would have probably got the door shut on us from project houses and, you know, certain consultancy, et cetera. But now people want to know and they want to learn because they know it's right here and it's something that's going to turn in that way sooner rather than later.
I think collaboration is really important, and I think you'd see that now. Everyone is trying to work together for the sort of, you know, the ultimate goal. We saw that in terms of the carbon conversation that we were having, well, we've been having over the last 18 months. We saw that at the last FEA conference. We had the panel, the carbon panel, and there was people from all over the industry came together to talk about that subject and how do we make that subject work for the industry as a group and not just single-handedly go off on your own and try and solve the world's problems. Let's all work together. Everyone's obviously everyone's running a business at the end of the day, but I think there's still collaboration. And I think in terms of what I have seen in the last 18 months of being part of the FEA is a lot more of that. Whether that's bringing in the new people and the next gen, you know, the next generation, and you see people at the older generation, let's call them, which I, you know, I'm one of those now, unfortunately. It's great to see though, you know, that next gen, and we all want to collaborate. Yeah. Us oldies and we want to collaborate with the youngsters and bring everyone in together. I think that's fantastic, and you see that at really any event you go to, how everyone works together and everyone's great friends as well.
Yeah,
which is brilliant. It's a brilliant place to be.
Definitely, and I think it's a fair point. You know, industries coming together, you know, like consultants join the FEA and different things like that. It's a real positive step.
Yeah.
Just want to pick up quickly on AI as we come to the end of the podcast. But, you know, recently I've seen some people being quite negative on LinkedIn, for instance, about the use of people using AI.
Mm.
I mean, I'll give you my spin on a minute. But, you know, I personally don't see anything wrong if people are using AI to support them in their business or make things quicker. I don't know what your view of, as long as you know what you're doing with it.
AI will be the biggest change in everyone's lives over the next five, not even that. It is progressing quicker than anyone, even just like day to day, would anyone realise. And you're either an adopter, early adopter, or you're trying to ignore it. I think if businesses are utilising AI into the way they operate, they are going to advance far quicker. And it's something that we are internally looking at in some of our processes. You know, there always will be a need for humans, of course, but utilising tools and AI packages and stacks is gonna shoot you into the stars pretty quickly. It's scary. I think everyone at the moment is scared on what it's going to do, what it can do. But I mean, it's so advanced already, even just for as I say, processes internally and
absolutely.
Automation in things to alleviate your team to do other things that are going to benefit the business other way.
A couple of weeks ago, I had to analyse about 120 invoices for a client on purchases.
Yeah.
And not ChatGPT, it was different AI. I just gave all those invoices to it and it put it all on a spreadsheet for me.
Yeah.
You know, so then I could then look at it.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd had to do that manually,
it's a couple of days worth of work. Yeah.
Which is, it took 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I was able to look at it and work with that data.
Everybody's using AI in some way.
Even without knowing.
Yeah.
People are using it. And I think the fear that people have is just maybe, again, an education, lack of understanding, because we're using it all the time. It's all around us.
Mm.
And it's fantastic. I mean, I think AI is brilliant. And I think in terms of Quintex, I believe that we've always been ahead of the curve anyway.
The technology, yeah.
In technology, you know, 20 years ago, we were using a system that was essentially, it's using some form of AI because we can remotely dial into it. It feeds data back to us and all of that sort of thing. We were well ahead of the curve back in, you know, the early 2010s, I guess. So, yeah, I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I love it. The other day, we were employing a new salesperson. So I asked it to devise me an interview process.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it just came up with stuff I wouldn't have even thought of because I haven't got the time to think about it.
Well, I'll tell you a story recently. No, it wasn't recently, it was about 6 months ago. Somebody screenshot something I put on LinkedIn and they'd run it through an AI checker. And then they emailed that to me and said, I've run your post through an AI checker and 90%, 80% of it was AI. And I was like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm articulate in speaking. I'm not academic at all. You know, I left school at 15 with no qualifications. So to be able to articulate that onto words, that's where AI has really helped me.
And why not?
But I think you've got to know what you're doing with it.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you've got to, like you say, you know what you want to do for the interview.
Yeah.
It's just helping you formulate that in a slightly better way.
Yeah.
You still got to know how you're going to do
that. Yeah, I think it just makes you think outside of the box and it will come up with ideas that perhaps you didn't think of. And you said earlier, like, I work full time, I'm the FEA chair, I'm a mum, I'm a wife. How do you find time? Well, exactly. Do you know what? I can quickly ask ChatGPT and they'll tell me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. I don't think there's any harm in that.
No, I don't either.
I suppose where it's dangerous is where it's, if you don't have experience, maybe.
I think, again, you have to be a bit sensitive of these things and careful, you know, careful for things like plagiarism, careful for, you know, not
the
putting
right
your
knowledge. The right information.
The right information,
yes.
But you're only putting
that
in what you know anyway.
Yeah.
And I think making sure that actually your employees and you as a business are not sharing necessarily confidential information that you don't want.
And above and beyond all of this is for us to keep our minds still academically active and not just let the AI do absolutely everything. Because that's another one. I was speaking to a professional a few weeks ago, and you can be, you know, it's just easy just to let it do it and not think about even that task. And I always think, actually, are we going to get sort of dumber as humans in some respect? Like, is AI just going to be so
advanced? Fact, it's probably actually making us smarter.
Yes,
because it's actually
education. It's, if you're reading,
it's educational you know, basically you have a quick 5-minute masterclass on whatever, and you suddenly think, okay, you know, you can put something in a better structure.
The one last thing I'll say about AI is that it's funny because you could say that technically Cheetah is an artificially intelligence-based system because it's taking conditions off of a cook line and then through its brain, it's then telling it to do something. But we do not advertise it as AI because it's not really AI. It's a cause and effect system. You know, it's sensors, optics, steam, smoke, temperature, do something.
Yeah.
Whereas I think AI is a bit different to that.
Okay. And just quickly, anything you can share with us? What's coming? I mean, just is it the same? Have you got any plans, Quintex, coming up this year, or is it just much carry on the same as you're doing and continue pushing the message? Or you've got some new staff coming?
Yeah, we've got new staff. Hopefully, we're always looking for, you know, new products that could complement what we're already doing.
Yeah.
So always looking for partners. We're also looking to export to other countries. You know, we're talking to the US, and obviously already the Middle East and the Far East.
Looking for more European partners.
Yeah.
Looking to more individual country based because we've normally been sort of a central hub. So obviously exploring that arena. And then I think really it's about pushing the overall solution and showing people what we can do there with our overall package.
That's kind of in its infancy, the year in, and it takes time to build that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably what you're speccing a year ago is now coming to fruition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's the end of the podcast. So thank you both very much. I hope you both enjoyed it. Thank you for giving me
really
your time.
Enjoyed it.
No, it's great.
Yeah,
thank you so much too.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, as we heard, that's the end of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We've learned a lot about Quintex and on-demand extraction, and also things like EcoFix, which helps keep your ducting clean. And then obviously some in-depth, a couple of interesting countries to go in, places to go and eat. If you've got any comments or anything you'd like me to ask, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I'm happy to report we're over 50,000 listeners now for the podcast, which is absolutely huge in 62 countries. And yeah, we're definitely leading in food service equipment in terms of podcasts. So if you want to come on the show as a guest, again, email me. If you've got time, please rate the show. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.